Yesterday, I chatted with a South African, Marisa Sarfati, who is originally from Cape Town and made Aliyah to Israel 11 years ago. And her home was one of those in Tel Aviv that got directly hit. Marisa, thanks so much for joining us on the line again. I wanted to chat with you a little bit further about your situation now and the situation of other people who have had their homes also take a direct hit from an Iranian missile. And yesterday when we were chatting with you, you said that you were fortunately in your sheltered room and you had, if I'm not mistaken, three or four others with you, and you had the feeling that there was a direct hit because there was such a loud noise. And we were chatting and you were saying you've been moved to a hotel in Tel Aviv and fortunately your three cats are with you. And I actually wanted to start off by asking you that. Were the three cats with you in your sheltered room when your apartment took a hit?
Hi, Paula, and thanks again for having me on. So actually, it's so interesting. People are always so concerned about the pets. And I actually only had one of my cats inside. My other one hid under the staircase. And the third one was actually found by the rescue team in my neighbor's apartment on the roof. Firstly, it was a miracle that I actually found all of them. The one in my mamad, actually, you know, when we opened the door and we tried to get him in the cat's box, he just ran away and I couldn't go upstairs. The rescue team wouldn't allow me because obviously it wasn't safe. A happy end to that story is that I have all three of them with me. They're all in good health, barring a toenail that was missing, but we all four made it through.
I was just going to say, I wonder if cats and any kind of pets have some kind of anxiety when this happens, but that's not actually my question. My question is that because we've obviously been focused very much on the human toll, we haven't had a chance to talk to people about animals. What happens normally in Israel? Do people take their pets into their mamads, into their safe rooms with them?
So it's really fun. Firstly, you can't really get the cat in. It's pure luck that the one cat was in there. And some people do. I know that I'm coaching a CEO currently, and he said he's getting towards training his dog to actually come into the mamad. It's quite a different thing, a difficult thing, because the alarms are terrifying. You know, just the sounds that we get on our phones, the alerts, and then the actual hazakah, which echoes in the city, is so loud and it's got such an awful sound that the animals immediately go into, you go into a body freeze, but your pets definitely, you know, scatter and scramble and look for the nearest hiding place.
I was reading that around 18,000 Israelis have been displaced by the missile damage of those 12 days from Iran. And of those, about 6,000 are in rental apartments and about 12,000 are living in hotels. You are one of those living in a hotel. Can you explain how you landed up in a hotel and what the Israeli government does once they realize that continuing to live in your apartment is not an option after it's been hit by an Iranian missile?
Right. So actually, you know, I'm in a hotel where I've got, you know, I keep meeting people who are from my area. So what the Israeli government do really well, and the Tel Aviv area did really, really well, is that, you know, pretty much within hours, I mean, the rescue team probably took about 30 to 50 minutes to get us out. I thought it was 30, but another girl that was in my mamad with me said that her boyfriend said it was 50. He said it was 2 hours, but we think it's too long. But basically, they have tents. They have three stations that you need to look at: your hotel, the insurance for your home that you need to register. And so they immediately are linked to the hotels. I think it's also that they did have that system in place from the beginning of the war when Hezbollah was attacking the north, and also with the penetration in the south on the Gaza border. all of those, they're called mefonim, which is displaced. So all of those people had to come to hotels and live in hotels. And actually, I have a friend who set up a voluntary organization of 80 washing stations, because doing your laundry in a hotel, you wouldn't believe it, but it's actually a problem. They don't do a service for you. You have to do it yourself, obviously. You're not a guest, a full guest. So, you know, there's a lot of volunteering in Israel, which really helps. And it really makes you feel like you're not in this alone.
I mean, 18,000 people is a lot of people. Did someone from the government come and assess the damage before they give you permission to move into a hotel? And part of the question is, do they give you an allowance now? I mean, people like you, and I know last time you said you're not sure the extent of what you've lost, but you've essentially lost just about everything.
Yeah, look, it's pretty much you come out and you see, like, your, you know, if you go onto my link that my friends have set up for the GoFund called Chesed, you'll see photos of my apartment, and there's a short video. Everything is shattered. So the government does not give you that money immediately. They need to assess. So they need you to not touch anything. So while you could pack, for example, your clothes, you can't clear anything, you can't remove anything. They need to assess it. So far, my, you know, compensation is definitely not coming through, even though the inspector put forward, you know, an advance for me. So that's where the frustration is that, and I hear it from other people, is that the compensation to keep you going is not coming through. Yeah, but it's still pretty early days. It was 2 weeks ago, if you think about it, and the system is really overwhelmed, that we do know. But yes, it's, you know, your whole life has changed, and you need to find new systems of how you're going to run your day, how you run your business, how you do everything, really. You have to reconfigure everything.
Marisa, I want to mention the fund that your friend set up for you. It's chesedfund.com, C-H-E-S-E-D fund, chesedfund, oneword.com. And if anyone wants to go and look at the pictures and in any way perhaps help Marisa, you can just click there on the latest campaigns and search for Marisa Sarfati, and her name is spelt M-A-R-I-S-S-A. Marisa, what about...
It's one S. M-A-R-I-S-A.
Yes, I have it in one place with one S and in one place with two. So I had a 50-50 chance of getting that wrong. Marisa, just following up, I was asking you about compensation, but how does it work in Israel in terms of insurance? Will you get money back from the government for your apartment that has been hit by a missile? And then do you get automatically money back for all your goods and your furniture and everything inside your apartment that was damaged, or is that something that relates or relies on personal life insurance for a tenant to take out?
So firstly, there is a caveat in Israel when you take out personal insurance. It does not cover anything to do with war. So no insurance company will give you any insurance related to war damage. The state covers, but there is a caveat. When it's around your personal belongings, there are caps, there's limits on what they cover. So you will get assessed and put into a certain category, and there is a cap on that. So, you know, if your stove and your oven and your light fittings and your clothes and everything go up, you're only getting a certain amount of money, and it depends how much the assessor will give you in your category. And when it comes to structural damage, which is also what I'm doing, because it's the actual structure that was damaged, it's not just broken glass from the window frames, there actually are distortions around, you know, the frame areas and the aluminium and, you know, all of those kinds of things, and the doors are blown off and everything. So that then is considered structural, and the Israeli government needs you to submit your quotations. Again, this is a lot of bureaucracy. It's a lot of work. And at the moment, I'm hearing it from everyone that that the contractors who are giving these quotes are so overwhelmed. The aluminium and glass, providers can't even come to your place because they're so overwhelmed with work. So it's really, really a struggle with finding the right people and getting your information into the system, and then waiting for the system to approve your quotations. So I'm in week two, and I've yet to submit the quotations because the system is slow and it's just not moving in the way you would want it to move in order to get things fixed and be able to go back home and live in your home.
What a horrible situation to find yourself in. I have one last question for you. When we were chatting in setting up this interview, if I'm not mistaken, you told me that you were saying Tehillim as everything was happening and that the building swayed and your neighbor said, "We've been hit." Can you remember what verses or prayers did you find yourself clinging to in that moment? And does that moment come back to you, and when you remember it, what goes through your mind?
Yeah, it's really an interesting thing. I was discussing it, talking about it with my friend who was in the Mamad with me. We totally agreed that we were, I was particularly focused on saying Tehillim 20, 91, and 121. Was the one that really resonated and keeps, coming back, because I kept on repeating the mantra, "The Guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps," and I believe that concept and phrase is in 121. And then these were the Tehillim I was given, and 130, I think, during the that you say during attack, and they're very apt, and they actually keep you incredibly grounded. And I was discussing it with my friend. We never ever felt that we were going to die. We actually felt a sense of protection. I always visualize it as the Yad, like the hand of Hashem over us. But it was incredibly, obviously it was terrifying. The sound was terrifying, and to feel the building sway was not a good feeling. But I must say that it was really a very anchoring tool, saying this Tehillim over and over again, and it kept me anchored in a very, very scary, overwhelming situation.